Hello, Nathalie here. Anyone else?
Hi, Samuel from Ghana.
Hi.
Your name again?
Nathalie from Canada.
Oh, Nathalie. Great.
Asking my son, or I don't think it is. What do you think?
Well, hi everybody, and welcome, welcome especially to the early bird. We're a minute ahead. I wanted to respond to a couple of the questions that some of you have sent in because they're particularly useful, I think, and hopefully helpful to you in discussing them. So I want to just begin a discussion. One question is how to best support a client when there's a disconnect between how the individual sees themselves and how others see them. When those things are out of alignment and are terrific challenges, especially at times of change and transition, do you think there's anything coaching can do? Absolutely. First, I would say this is a great example of how we earn our money in coaching. When the process is recreated to bring alive the issue the client most needs to deal with, because this is not simply content of focusing on strategizing and looking at what's next and creating a structure and concrete steps, but this is part of how we see a client's operating system come alive in the process, because that 90 to 95% of the operating system that's unconscious is going to come alive in the process of how the client relates to you, because they're not, by definition, conscious of it, so they're not objective and can't reflect on it. This is how we can be of help to a client. So let me just mention some things that I think might be helpful. First, here's a quick example of this. An individual was referred to me who was one of six top executives at a large corporation. He had, I guess I need a mute star six, if you, I'm doing an open mic and we're not on discussion mode. So if you do a mute star six, until we move to discussion mode, I wanted to keep it open for your responses. He was one of six top executives at a large corporation. He had annoyed and alienated everyone in the executive suite, and they were ready to vote to release him. He was about to leave, and then the suggestion was made, well, let's give Kruger a final shot, and my client agreed. So guess what? He began in work with me and annoyed the hell out of me. He was showing me exactly what it was like to be him. So here are some principles that I think are important. To put your ego in a blind trust. In other words, to not take personally what the client says or does. And to consider how this process comes alive. The client is doing the very best job possible to show you exactly what it's like to be him or her. They bring alive in the process the issue that they may not be conscious of or see or understand and most need help with. In other words, he was recreating the issue with me that he significantly needed help with. And because it was ingrained as an attachment and behavioral and emotional pattern that's hardwired, it was not likely that he was going to understand this on his own. I'll make a note here. I'm going to send you guys a white paper on attachment patterns. It's something that we likely won't be able to have time to discuss, but I want you to have it. So, as with any client, the first developmental phase of a coaching relationship and engagement is to develop a working alliance, meaning that the client knows unequivocally that you are fully engaged and fully immersed in the process of helping that client create significant success, and to understand what it would take for change and transformation and success, meaning that the client knows you're all in. And that also means you can get away with saying what you need to say because it's in a collaborative framework. So this is important, that the client knows that you're not being judgmental or critical or pejorative. So, and none of this guy's colleagues or other executives or friends or family could get away with this. So this is important to establish this collaborative framework to begin with, and then to engage the curiosity of the things that get recreated in the process to understand that and to understand how the client can address that. So an important aspect of that is to recognize, and I touched on this earlier, but it relates to another question one of you sent in. Our clients don't experience what they're doing as their story. It's just reality. Story is the metaphor that I'm using to talk with you guys about what we do in mentor coaching. It's not something, it's not a way I would talk with clients, but it's something, if it can help us understand, better understand what the client and you are co-creating, this might be useful to look at this and to get a perspective. So this is something that we want to keep in mind, that if we introduce the concept or the possibility of change, that we do it by asking a question to get someone engaged instead of giving facts or information or data that someone would either agree to or oppose. But this is an important aspect of how we engage someone to co-create a new story. So basically, every client has facts and beliefs and information that is part of the anatomical reality in their brain, so that we are understanding this and not trying to address change, but to collaboratively understand. Now, we're going to talk about a systematic way to do this, to roadmap a new story, and I'm going to use a career change as an illustration of this to give you an idea of how to apply it. But I want to be sure this makes sense and to see if there are other related questions or additional aspects that might be helpful to talk about at this point. So first, does this make sense, and are there additional aspects or questions that this raises? Because I know this is a very cursory overview of a very important process. So any comments or questions or clarifications about anything so far while we're on discussion mode?
Hi, my name is Connie LaFlamme, and I was not able to join you all last week. I've been listening to the first session, trying to get caught up. And I think you said you were going to do this, but will you give an example, for example, with that client of how you did that? Simple.
Okay.
Illustrative example.
I can give you a kind of an illustration of a process that with this person, I recognized how he was pushing people away and probably wasn't aware of it. So I asked him what he was aware of in terms of his interaction and why people had sent him or suggested that we meet. And he talked about that, and I asked his point of view about that. And he was able to get some perspective and describe in a way his experience of that, his annoyance at the other people. And I wanted to look for what neuroscientists call a bright spot. this was initially introduced by a very well-known family therapy clinic on the West Coast. The usual approach to dealing with troubled families was to look at the problem, to try to solve it, but that just engages the problem. And that's what the usual consultancy does, which etches the problem's pathways more deeply in someone's brain. What they found was if they looked for the one time the problem didn't occur, they then could see this was the solution, and the family could see the solution, so they saw a way, a bright spot, that they could replicate that and look at it in a positive way. So I asked him if there would be, if there were a time that he could recall that things had gone really well in meeting with his group. And he described that, and I asked him for his experience and to highlight what he felt went right. So looking at that from a positive framework, a positive state of mind, was very different than he was accustomed to, because as soon as he got anywhere around his colleagues, he immediately had that state of mind where he was in a defensive, protective state. And here's what we know from neuroscience and conversational intelligence. The first few words that someone says will boot up a particular mindset in the listener or the reader. And if those first few words are positive and engaging, then it's a very positive mindset and a whole neurochemical system of collaboration is established. If those first few words are perceived as threatening or as negative or derogatory, it boots up an entirely different mindset that processes the remainder of the conversation. So that's what we focused on, is looking at what could create a positive mindset with us, for him to look at this and for us to explore this in a collaborative way. Now, here's a sidebar of what I think is the simplest the simplest study that's been done on this. The soccer penalty kick. Some of you have heard me talk about this. The penalty kick is the same number of feet from the goal, the same square feet of the goal, the same goalie. If the framework is playing to not lose, in other words, it's tied, the kicker has to make the shot. And I'm sorry, if they're one down, so they play not to lose. If he makes the point, they tie and go into overtime. So he's playing not to lose. The shooter is successful 62% of the time in those instances. Same kicker, same framework, same goalie. If it's playing to win, in other words, if the kicker makes the shot, the team will win. Successful 92% of the time. A 30% difference in success rate just based on state of mind. So initial conversational intelligence tells us that the initial words can frame an entire mindset to engage someone. So that's not an elaborate example, but it's a kind of principle that we began to work from there in engaging together to look at those situations, because he wasn't pleased with them, and he saw and felt what a different situation was, the bright spot, and how that felt better, even though he was very accustomed to dealing with things in a very different way. So does that make sense at this point?
Yes, thank you so much. That was perfect.
Yeah, a great question. Thanks. I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and I'm hoping to have a bit more time if you have other questions, but I want to illustrate the use of a systematic approach here. So hold on for one moment. Okay, I want to do a brief overview of a system that I'd like to introduce. That just listen to this overview and see if it makes sense and how it fits with your experience or what you believe. You've heard me say that much of our behavioral and emotional response is automatic. 90 to 95% is unconscious. So our lives are filled with these script patterns of how we respond to situations. When we repeat certain patterns, our brain hardwires as the default mode. So the script for each scenario in our lives operates ultimately then without conscious thought. So the roadmap system that I want to introduce here, roadmap is the acronym for the 7 steps to understand the algorithms of behavior, emotion, attachment. It's simply one strategic way to deconstruct and understand personally constructed stories and how to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior. Now, the approaches to changing behavior that work, consider what this does to personal stories. This is about understanding also how this impacts identity. So this is why it's not about just asking the right questions, because our clients wouldn't know the answers, or giving great information, because that's not the way our minds and brains work. So I want to use the roadmap system to walk you through an example here, focusing on career transition, to kind of bring it alive. So first step, recognize, and this is in your outline, the roadmap and what it stands for. Recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Describe your career story as it exists now, and then describe what you want in your career story. So if someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone's performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that this job or this career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, they're likely to not have the information needed. They can't make an informed choice of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career and contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career, because it's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling at 80% would be repeated in the new situation. So here's a question for a client in this situation. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? And I've always been amazed a client will exactly know the answer. It's not like they have to think about it and get back to you or have a rain. They'll immediately say 80% or 70%. It's like they knew the question was coming somehow. I haven't figured that one out yet. So if it's not 100%, explore why. That's your immediate coachable moment. Have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so that you can make an informed decision? So here's a brief story. It's sort of related. The beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, many moons ago, for a small part of my professional time, I served as consultant at the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research at Baylor College of Medicine, where I was faculty, working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as a result of an accident. Now, not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime of disability. So instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves or treat what may have been seen as a depression, but it was a realistic assessment of their situation in a way, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. And suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially now when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. And I thought they needed me to understand that so we can understand together. I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, recognizing that it was at a different level since the onset of disability. This was the emotional rehabilitation that paralleled the physical rehabilitation. Only by achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, if they decided they wanted to die, I would respect that situation, I would respect that decision, and I would still stick with them. Well, thankfully, with a few hundred people over a period of 5 years, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new but different level of function. Second step, own your career story, especially your needs and ideals. Be clear about needs and ideals if and how they align with passion and experience. When your passion and expertise combine, terrific possibilities can emerge. So a question here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something. Rarely both. Distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. And be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, you may need to realign or commit or recommit to your career. Keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself or to money or the things that money bought, but she was addicted to the pursuit of perfection, her work ethic, everything. She was in a particular kind of medical practice. Everything had to be perfect. More became a goal. More work, more perfect, even more money, which was a metric of it. The story of the pursuit of money had become a substitute for other stories. The ideal of more, of course, lacks an endpoint. So her self-esteem was never validated. She never arrived. She had become exhausted with a perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet never quite getting there. Now, put that on hold. I'm going to return to that in just a moment. Step three, assess your career story. Now, a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain. It's a physical neuronal network. A teacher can't just present an explanation and expect it's going to overwrite the information or the neural network that's already there. But change can occur, as you know from being a coach, as a process, not an event. This step is to assess beliefs to see if they're limiting and perhaps to try out other beliefs. So these are things to perturbate that, to examine that together with your client. What's another way of looking at that? How might your thoughts be limiting you? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there questions you're afraid to ask? What do you really want? Is there something you need to let go of and haven't? In other words, what is present and what is missing in a current career? What information is needed? Maybe research new information regarding skills, abilities, aptitudes. Here are a couple of questions to sort of perturbate that. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What's it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? And here it may be important to distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness are often blamed on a job, like a marriage. People want to change the obvious external cause rather than to look inside, to put it on something or someone else and then change that person or leave that place or that person. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles to externalize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or at least to pose a recognizable remedy. Then, the supposed way to get rid of the problem is to leave it, a geographic cure of sorts. Step 4, decide on a plan and how to make it work. Here, I'd reference the needs and ideals exercises in the resources section of the outline. Do it yourself first for you to see how it may be helpful to be clear about your fundamental needs and your fundamental ideals, to use that in the strategy that you develop and the goals that you develop, to be sure all of those are going in the same direction. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be different than what you've done for 3 or more decades. It means that you may examine again fundamental strengths and fundamental needs and ideals. Perhaps for the first time, and I see this in so many of the coaches who I'm privileged to train, they will be self-directed. They will be outside the structure of someone else telling them what to do, an organization, a business structure, and making it up as they go along, creating their own professional practice and business. So, to return to the client pursuing perfection for just a moment, her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it. She wasn't feeling fulfilled, only looking for the next task to do perfectly. I highlighted this pattern that I noticed and asked for her reflection on it. It seemed that as soon as she began really enjoying her work, really feeling immersed in it, she began procrastinate. She would put off completing a task, which restored her old feeling of vague guilt or even dread about what she should be doing. When I highlighted this pattern, she recognized it. It prompted her insight. She said, work always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I sort of began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working. So here, as we think about our specialty in change and transformation, our subspecialty is co-creating systems, because with the system you have a map, and each step is specific, finite, and can be very rewarding. Step 5, map a new story. Where, when, how to begin. SMART goals, initiatives, next best action. And one of the navigation systems can be the brain's error detection mechanism. The human brain patterns of connections for our ongoing search for meaning, these mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. Discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. Our brains even have an error detection mechanism located really close to the emotional center, that when we see something that is other than what we expect, other than the repeated pattern of things, it reads as, this isn't normal. This includes when we try something new. And as we've touched on before, keep this in mind as you're collaborating with your client and recognizing with them that each new step into the unknown or the previously not experienced will be attendant with some trepidation, some uncertainty. Now, this error detection mechanism in the brain explained a number of things. We notice differences more easily than confirmation. So it becomes easier to focus on the things we do wrong and yet struggle to look at or define our own strengths. If advice or new information is unfamiliar or unwanted, it sets off this error detection mechanism, this response, meaning that somebody will reject an idea even before consideration and be another barrier to resist change. This is one reason why telling a client what to do or giving advice or suggestions may trigger that error detection mechanism. To focus on problems energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. Bad news gets our attention for the same reason. The mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context in our lives, such as stress or in childhood, may no longer apply in usual situations. But this hardwiring is not permanent. It can be revised, changed. When changes occur in a systematic and consistent way, such as what we do with clients, a collaborative, contingent conversation, new connections are made in the brain. New maps are created. The brain's error detection mechanism can be used as part of a powerful internal navigation system. So this choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. We are susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, or even short-sighted. When we consider how people think, we can design environments and a collaborative context of choice that makes it easier for people to really see and then choose better options. Step 6 of the roadmap, author changes. Implement the plan to reach a goal. Now, to do this, someone needs the correct paradigm. So, back to our example, changing careers may mean changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career, you just change the setting. Even if you go from head of HR at one mid-sized oil company to another in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. That's from an example from a client. The correct paradigm would be about not only the process, but the content of the new career, as well as the process of change. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined continually for correctness. For example, one I know quite well. In making a transition from medical practice to mentor coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My personal assistant would take the calls, put patients on the schedule, the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach had to drag me kicking and screaming into the whole world of marketing. So a question here, who else may need to be involved in the career change plan? And 7, program new experiences to incorporate them as part of an identity. Now, the most powerful force of the human psyche is our fundamental identity, the operating system of how and who we see ourselves to be. If you help a client create a change of behavior, unless that's integrated into their operating system, into a transformation, including their identity, they'll revert back to exactly what they did before. When changes don't last, somebody has not changed their identity. When there is a shift in identity, it becomes permanent. the strongest force in the human psyche is to remain consistent with our own identification of ourselves, our identity. Not what I do, but who I am. We stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. So this is why in the process, I believe, of mentor coaching, that a vital aspect of what we do with our clients is to address this process of the change, of the transformation of their operating system of how and who they see themselves to be in an evolving way that incorporates this new behavior, this new aspect of themselves as part of who they really are, not just something they're doing or something they're adding on. Now, we're really talking in a way about our operating systems. And that's the 90 to 95% I mentioned that may be unconscious. Now, from that operating system, one way to listen to that in our work as mentor coaches is to listen to the surface story and the shadow story. Now, here's how that can sound. The surface story is that 5 or 10% that's conscious. You know, I want to really create a good business and generate wealth. Now, the shadow story that may not be conscious, and it may be all too conscious for some people, but the shadow story can ghostwrite behavior. And that can sound like this. Well, you know, I don't really believe I can make big money, or I don't think I have what it takes, or what if I did all that work and then I failed and I was just embarrassed? Here's another example. I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. Here's the shadow story. Well, I can't really have total authority because my partner acts like I'm taking it away from myself when I do that. So mentor coaching requires us, I think, to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. Considerations of a career need to be considered, I think, also in conjunction with the developmental phases of the individual, both within that career as well as where the individual is in life development. Needs and ideals may need to be considered in terms of a life phase. For example, the developmental issues more in the foreground for a certain life phase may determine how someone views a career, challenges, or the desire to change careers. So here's an ongoing assessment, just one way to look at this. Once a plan is there, once there's a system created to monitor that, we need to look at four things. To continually monitor the choices, to question the ideas that frame those, to probe the reasoning, and fundamentally ask, does it work? So here are some mentor coaching applications, how we can translate that into mentor coaching. One is challenge your mindset. For example, every task can be seen in terms of challenge and opportunity, an improvable skill, a growth mindset of how you can get better rather than get it done. Only. Approach work with new perspectives. Think more simply, maybe more abstractly, deeper, more synthetically. Think long-term, the place of your work in a system. And this is not just the cross-section of a job or a piece of work. Get feedback from other sources, multiple sources, including outside your field. And do these approaches consistently. It's what distinguishes significant achievers. So I want to move back and look at this process in terms of assessing it, to look at some essentials of engineering effective change. remember we talked about sometimes that when someone does what we may think of or what may be viewed as resisting change, it may simply be they're not aware of what the next step is. So that's where we come into play to co-create a system. So to engineer effectiveness, focus specifically on the next step. Here's an example of that. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed, though, to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was asked, how in the world did he keep going when he was exhausted and knew he still had thousands of miles ahead? And he replied, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. Two, specify the next step. Not abstract, not global, not vague. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. Three, make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick or a map to determine where you are, where you're going. That allows you to measure progress along the way and to tell what's detour and distraction. Think about how the coaching model that you may use is that map for that coaching story for that particular time. You ask the client what the client wants to focus on, where they'd like to get to. There's the map. Then you can measure progress along the way. You can tell what's detour and distraction. You have a map that you successfully approximate to that client's goals. One of the best examples, and another is make progress measurable, make progress visible. One of the best examples of shrinking a task to a tangible next step is Alcoholics Anonymous, challenging its members to one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a measurable, foreseeable, specific action. A small target leads to small victories. It's a cumulative experience of effectiveness and mastery. And when you think about it in that way, all you ever have to do is the next right thing. So we've just adopted the scientific method to examine, to measure, to test, to consider change. The scientific method is a challenge to create a mindset of inquiry can generate discomfort, but it also catalyzes growth. So here are, in summary then, a dozen AAA principles of change to author a transition story. The AAA principles are awareness, acceptance, and action. I told you I was a fan of simplicity. First principle, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of the storylines with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business or career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. Now, a not-so-secret to success is you have to pay for that success in full. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, experience. Here's another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy and engage instead as a consideration what you do have, what you want. And here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. That's why positive or negative focus becomes so important. And remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it, the author of your story. Here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want, when you play not to lose. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Third AAA principle, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Now, here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? Remember in the old days, let's go back and time travel. The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So a goal is kind of like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and then the time can be determined. So a caveat here, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And here's from the neuroscience and law of attraction. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's kind of like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. And here's an application of that. If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. You've already engaged it. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial may be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? And here's a classic old story about this. In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life in business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had over 90% of the assets of the entire group. That story, that study has been replicated in other instances as well. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, and this is what you may want to listen for as you hear your client indicate what they want to focus on and what they want to get to during this conversation, the difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time. Where and when, the travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m., December 31st, 2024. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal and a plan. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $300 from my checking to my retirement fund the first day of each month, beginning July 2024. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you. Incredible opportunity, move you to a higher level, quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat, and every October riding in a courtyard in the French Quarter. But you're going to have to set your own goals there. Then reread your goals, regular breakthrough, twice a day. when you wake up, when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that may seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step, a first step, to take for progress. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Just go to the next telephone pole. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes 20 to 25 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make an action or a process permanent. Be consistent. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, not just the 10,000 hours of dedicated work, but the deliberate practice informed by performance neuroscience. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. That's why perfect practice makes perfect performance. This is something that we specialize in. So, and guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is fairly simple. Good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. But the caveat here is you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old one. And there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation, which is why we're talking. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner. Ask on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. If you do this, you can get direct feedback and learn what you can address. Now, even without this kind of feedback, you can still ask employees or colleagues on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? Now, a sidebar here. You may have noticed in each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story, a new career story or a new story, begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experiences in 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. There's a review of research on goal setting in the work pages of your outline. It helps us understand a couple of essential components. 1, which is what the study was based on, why people give up on goals, but it also provides, if you stick with them and stick with that system, what success insurance can look like. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If it gets rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your entire life to now not having a New York Times bestseller. Go big. Here's an illustration. A young chiropractor, just out of professional school, wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoons? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he asked, as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500. In the first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. So don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite a story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, "This is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience or equipment?" He said, "Yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap." Well, when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. Now, you're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6 for a number of days, but nobody told Cliff this. So when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. They were all asleep. They couldn't tell him anyhow. He shuffled along for almost 4 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. Now, we each have beliefs that limit us. Find or create the story that will improve you and start believing and doing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12. You're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the late 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces can fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity which can be described eventually using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. That's what we're listening for while our clients are talking about other things. We're on discussion mode, so it's an open mic if you'll manage the background. Thoughts, questions, clarifications about anything we've talked about. I'm interested in your responses and questions that I might be able to help or clarify. If you would, write down this question to think about sometime between now and our next seminar. And not the immediate response would be most helpful. But I'm not interested in hearing it now because I want to save it to discuss it next time. And I'll tell you why I'm asking for your immediate response as we discuss it. Write down one word or one phrase. Can I get a management of the background noise? I'm picking up some technical static. One word or one phrase to this question for you. What is your unlived life? Write it down, tuck it away. We'll begin there next time and talk about it a bit. But for right now, I'm hearing you cough. If you would mute, please. We're hearing all of that. And I'd like to keep an open mic because I'm interested in your questions, thoughts, reflections. What would be most helpful in our very few minutes for us to discuss? Clarifications or questions, anyone?
This is Carolyn Shepherd. I have a question.
Go for it.
I was a minute or two late calling in because I was having trouble connecting. I thought this was our second seminar tonight.
This is our third. The recordings are in place. At the link that you received, you'll notice that the outline and the workbook are there, too, for you to download. and hopefully keep track. And the recordings are at the porch there. The first two are there. This will be at the third port. And next week, our fourth will be there as well.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a second session as well.
This is our second session.
No, I'm off. I'm looking at the wrong week. This is our second. You're right. This is our second seminar. My fault.
Okay.
I'm looking at
the wrong. I was really confused.
Yeah, the first one is there at last week, the June 3rd, and this will be posted sometime tomorrow. Yeah, we have two remaining. And you'll
so
see
then
the
we'll
outline.
Go back.
I'm
so
sorry?
We'll do the second one.
Next
okay,
time.
Our outline.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll go back and do the second one next
exactly.
week.
And
I
originally planned this to do the roadmap early on so that you'd have a point of reference and a system to then discuss two and four, to discuss our next two seminars, because I thought it might be helpful to do a systematic overview using a roadmap and have a way to fit that in and make it make sense. So I know that was confusing that I didn't give a heads up at the beginning before I did that. My apologies for that. But that was my strategy initially.
Okay.
So
any
clarifications or questions or anything, fire an email, and I'm interested in your response to that question, and then we'll pick up with what you have in your outline as week two. So thanks very much for all the kind words and responses you've sent. I'll be eager to hear anything else you have to add or ask and incorporate it into our discussion. So thanks very, very much. We'll pick up right here next time.
This is Connie LaFlamme again. I somehow am not on the mailing list. I had to reach out to Bernadette to get the call-in information and the link. Is there a way I can reach out to you so I can ensure I'm on your email distribution list?
Yeah, send me an email. I have the list of everyone, and I've sent a group email a couple of times. Just send me a response by email, and I'll incorporate it into the mailing of everyone. I keep it a blind copy to everyone, but I do send a couple of emails with downloads. So I'll definitely.
What is your email address, please?
D Kruger, D as in David, KRUEGER @ mentorpath.com. MENTORPATH.com.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks very much. Look forward to picking up with you right here next time. Thanks again.
Thank you.